This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Still searching for a great candidate for your company? Don't search, just match with Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/the best. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, podcast listeners, it's Anne here with this week's podcast extra. How many famous women scientists can you name? Marie Curie? Jane Goodall? Well, how about the astronomer Cecilia Payne-Gaposchkin? Or the cytogeneticist Barbara McClintock? Or the inventor and movie star Hedy Lamarr? I bet you got that one. Remembered or not, they all made contributions. But there's so many women who never even got that far. Women who started out in science, but then got shut out because they were the wrong gender. One of those was Albert Einstein's first wife, Mileva. She might just have been more brilliant than he was, but we'll never know. Marie Benedict wrote a wonderful novel about her. It's called The Other Einstein. It brings Mileva back to fictional life as a young university student in the same class as Albert Einstein.
October 20th, 1896, Zurich, Switzerland. Squaring my shoulders and willing myself to be just a little taller than my regrettably tiny frame, I place my hand on the heavy brass handles of the classroom. Turn the knob and push the door open, I told myself. You can do this. Professor Heinrich Martin Weber and I looked at each other.
You are?
He asked.
Miss Mileva Mersch, sir.
I prayed my voice didn't quaver. Very slowly, Weber consulted his class list. Of course he knew precisely who I was. The consultation of the class list was a blatant and calculating move, telegraphing his opinion of me to the rest of the class. It gave them license to follow suit.
You may take your seat,
he finally said, and gestured towards the empty chair. In the 1980s, there was a wonderful collection of letters found in a shoebox in a distant relative's closet.
God, one of those letters in a shoebox findings.
I know, I want to find some of those letters. And they discovered really the origin of the Mileva-Albert relationship.
Did they talk about physics?
They talk about physics a lot. And this is what really caught the mind of the physics community was, and I'm quoting, their special work on relativity.
Special work.
I mean, our work, I think, is how it was described in the letters. They obviously were working on that together as a project. And that sparked the question, how far did it go? How much did she do? Was she a sounding board? Did she do the math? Was she really there in the creative process? You know, was she sparking ideas?
Well, you posit in the novel that the theory of relativity was either her breakthrough insight or definitely something that both of them were working on. Is there evidence that that's true?
There's no hard and fast evidence. Yeah. But I feel like knowing how smart she was and how hard she worked and knowing the kind of relationship that she and Albert had in terms of science, I kind of started to feel like the question should be not prove to me that she did the work, which is really what a lot of the scientists were asking, mm-hmm. but prove to me that she didn't. Mm. Prove to me that a woman who has all this intellect and capability and is used to kind of engaging in the scientific process with her boyfriend and husband, I couldn't imagine them sitting across the dinner table and not talking about it, not bouncing ideas off one another. So I kind of took that to the next level in the book.
So
their relationship begins with this wonderful kind of sense of scientific intellectual collaboration. But as the book goes on, I got angrier and angrier at him. He treated her like such a jerk.
Yeah.
How much of that is true?
I actually shied away from the project at the beginning because I know that Einstein is such a secular icon for so many people. There's a lot of things I chose not to put in because I didn't want it to be too negative. Because even though I didn't set out to tell a negative story about him, it necessarily comes up based on the pattern of his treatment of her.
Well, to begin with, she has this illegitimate child, his child. Right. He hasn't married her.
No.
And says he can't. He sent her back to go live with her parents, and she's had this illegitimate baby, and he never comes to visit the child. Did he ever see his own child?
As far as we know, no. You know, people didn't even know that they had that illegitimate daughter, their only daughter, until the 1980s when those letters were found, those letters in a shoebox. Those were the first and only reference to Liz Earle. And in the beginning, he sounds excited about the baby. He promises that things will work out, but Malev is the one who has to deal with the reality of being an unwed mother in the late 1800s, having to go home to her family and waiting for him to get a job because only then will he agree to marry her. And he had trouble getting a job. It took him years to get a really solid job because he had really alienated all of his professors.
You think the baby died?
We don't know what happened to the baby. There's a wonderful book I reference in the end of my book, In Search of Liz Earle by Michelle Zachman. And it's a journalist basically trying to find out what happened to this baby. She came to the conclusion at the end that there was no definitive answer. I decided that I don't believe Liz Earle survived the scarlet fever that ultimately she did suffer from. And Liz Earle is never seen again.
You make it so real, which is partly why I'm asking what actually
what's
is real and what's not, because
I just
kept wanting to know. But one thing that you do that I think is so beautiful and kind of poetic is you imagine yourself into Maleva's mind and heart, mm-hmm. and imagine here's this woman whose beloved first child, mm-hmm. her daughter, has died. She's a brilliant physicist. And you kind of posit that in some ways the breakthrough comes to Maleva because time is something she's thinking about deeply, having lost a child.
Yes. This was right around the time that all these theories in 1905, the four most critical theories that really form the basis for modern physics, are published in papers under Einstein's name in 1905. It's called his miracle year. One of them is relativity. And I just, you know, this is all happening at the same time. October 12th, 1903, Novi Sad, Serbia. The last time I was in this train station, I promised myself I wouldn't pass through on my return to Bern without my Liz Earle. Scarlet fever broke my promise. I'd spent the better part of my life trying to uncover God's hidden rules for the universe through the language of physics. Who was to say there wasn't a rule of physics as yet undiscovered, one that would help me with my pain and suffering over the loss of Liz Earle? I stared at the station clock and the train waiting patiently beneath it. I knew somehow, some way, that the answer lay before me. What was it? The clock, the train, Liz Earle. What would happen if the train left the station not at 60 kilometers per hour, but at close to the speed of light? What would happen to time? If the train left the station at rapid speeds approaching the speed of light, the clock's hands would still move. But the train would be moving so quickly that the light could not catch up with it. The faster the train accelerated, the slower the hands would move, ultimately freezing once the train reached the speed of light. Time would effectively freeze. And if the train could go faster than the speed of light, then time might roll backwards. There it was. Why did God only allow me to see his handiwork after so much suffering?
You mentioned his miracle year, the year when he published how many?
Four.
Four breakthrough papers on at least one of those, her name was on it originally, but before publication, but mm-hmm. then removed. Am I getting this right?
Yeah. So a lot of the players involved in this have now passed away, but there have been testimony that one of the editors of the, and I'm going to butcher this, Annalen der Physik, which was probably the most prestigious physics journal at the time, in which all four of those publications were written and published. The special relativity paper, which was published along with the other ones, there was testimony by one of the editors of that journal that when it first came in, there was the name Marisch-Einstein on it, which would have been Mileva's name, and that somehow in the process it was removed. Now, whether or not that's true, you know, we don't have that first document. Mm-hmm. But to me, reading that, I thought, well, what if her name had been on there? What if her name had been removed? Who might have done it? How might that have made her feel? He promised to her that they were going to be unlike everybody else, mm-hmm. that they were going to have a marriage and a scientific partnership. They were going to be bohemians. She entered into that relationship with that understanding. And having her name on those papers would have been, you know, really a testimony to the success of that partnership, no matter the sacrifice of her daughter. And when it wasn't there, I just could imagine what that must have felt like for her.
As the years go by, Einstein's fame grows. He starts treating her with such contempt. At one point, he told her when they were in public, she was to walk behind him. Did he really do that?
I don't know if Einstein ever really said that to her, but I do know that it became her practice to walk behind him. And, you know, there is at the very end of their relationship, he at this point has decided he really doesn't want to continue in this marriage. And he gives her an ultimatum, which he, I think, assumes will finally drive her out the door because she stayed for the children's sake for all these years. And it's an unbelievable contract. You can find it if you Google it. In which he sets forth all these horrific conditions upon which he will remain in the marriage.
Like what?
Like, you will not speak to me in public. Specific requirements as to how the house will be kept, how his study will be kept, how and when she's allowed to speak with him, how and when she's allowed to talk to the children about him, what her expectations about any kind of relationship they might have in a physical sense will be. A huge list of things upon which she must agree if he's going to remain. And it was the final straw between them, as I think he knew it would be.
It must have changed how you yourself feel about Albert Einstein.
Oh my gosh, yes. I hate to say it, but I mean, what it has confirmed for me was something that I've always known, which is that you can be a great person in your field. You can be a tremendous artist, writer, scientist, mathematician, physician, and you can be a not so good person. You know, he was a great man of science, but he was not a great man. And that is hard for some people to stomach.
So I confess, I read the book with kind of mounting rage. On behalf not just of Mileva, but this is sadly such a familiar story mm-hmm. by now. So what do you think Mileva's story adds to this ongoing narrative?
First of all, it does just sort of reiterate that it hasn't really changed that much. For as far as we think we've come, we have to come so much farther. Because when I go out and talk to readers or audiences about my book, I cannot tell you the number of women that come up to me afterwards and share their own stories. Scientists, women who've left the profession due to harassment, lack of recognition, inability to ascend. The wow. stories are really countless.
And the other thing I wound up thinking about, and this is where I think fiction is such a wonderful vehicle for thinking about some of these things, because fiction really takes you into somebody's interior life. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, well, there are these stories about women who have done something, made a contribution, and then weren't credited for it. But there's another subtler thing that happens that's really hard to document, and that's how does a bright woman's potential get sapped? How does a woman's ambition get marginalized? And, you know, and what are the steps by which that happens?
You're absolutely right, and that's what I hoped to do. It's a slow decline. It's not something that happens overnight or in a month or a year. It's a slow wearing down. At first, you get belittled by your professors, then your classmates, but you still persevere. But I think that sapping of self-esteem, that sapping of tenacity, that sapping of drive, it happens slowly, and you do get to see how it happens to Maleva. But it was a terrible, terrible loss overall. Who knows what else she could have done in the physics world, both for us in that respect today, but also to her personally.
And we can still dream that someday somebody will find another shoebox
exactly.
in an attic, and it'll be filled with some breakthrough theory that she had and never even published.
You do not even know how much I wish for that. I would love for either evidence of her role in these theories or her own theory were found one day. But even if they're not, I think Maleva's story is important unto itself.
Thank you so much for talking.
Thank you so much for having me.
Marie Benedict is the author of The Other Einstein. Thanks for listening. That was a podcast special from To the Best of Our Knowledge, the radio show and podcast from PRX. And you can find out more about us and listen to more shows at ttbook.org.
Support for To the Best of Our Knowledge comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thebest. That's odoo.com/thebest.